they can see the text is clear what it says in the Bible. You can't go left or right. It's clear.
Women, we can teach our sons, you know, what we will like in a man, what, you know, certain qualities that we will like in a man, but we can't teach them how to be men.
Everything. You could be out running the world, but if you come home and your home is hell, you know, you're not going to have peace.
Because we support things like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, where they go on 20 dates with 20 different people and make out 20 some different times with each. But then we shun polygamy.
If this person is in need, they're needy. Therefore, I'll tolerate it if she's...
Oh yeah, the
so
pity
that,
party.
So we call it a pity party.
Oh yeah, oh
so
yeah.
Let's talk about that. Is that one of them? We'll put that in the list.
That's one of them.
There's the emotional blackmail from a wife, threatening to take the children away or leaving
you.
Raise boys to be men. Okay.
Who are these sisters next to you?
I'll let them introduce themselves. I'm again Coach Nadir from Outstanding Personal Relationships. Yeah. This is
Coach Fatima. I'm his wife.
And I am Coach Nyla. I am also his wife.
Oh, you said something interesting there. I mean, you've chosen to take on a great responsibility. These are not your mistresses or your girlfriends, but they just introduced themselves as your wives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I feel you really have to be twice the man to participate in polygyny, especially in today's society.
I mean, there's some countries that they see you as less a man if you don't have multiple families.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, when we even go to the origins of monogamy, which is relatively new, the whole goal was just to allow you to have one legal person, a legal wife that you would take care of, and any children that come from that. That didn't prohibit you from having as many concubines, mistresses, jump downs, or whatever you want to call them, boyfriends, all of this stuff on the side. Monogamy just has one person. So when we look at politicians or preachers like Jesse Jackson or Bill Clinton, they're practicing monogamy without issue.
So you said they're practicing what?
Monogamy.
Who are the men you were mentioning?
Those are just some politicians.
Yeah.
I mean, we can go all the way across the board.
Because we see that many people are practicing polygyny, but the legal form that's not accepted by the Creator. Because you have, I don't think there's many people that are clearly practicing monogamy. They might do the legal version, meaning that they have one legal wife. But like you said, they're messing around, you know, with all these other women on the side. So they're practicing an illegal form of polygyny that's not accepted by the Creator.
Right, indeed. And that's our thing. Again, we're not anti-monogamy at all. We're pro-morals.
Yeah.
And it's part of that, one of the forms of marriage, and meaning that pro-morals mean that we support marriage, which is the crux of any society, any community, any nation, indeed. And polygyny is a form that has so much wisdom in it, and a lot has been lost in our conditioning.
Yeah. So back to the basis, what I was saying was, because for some people, they've been conditioned so much, the knee-jerk reaction is right away to say something vile, to think something bad, and to say something maybe that they start bullying and whatnot. So one, you guys don't all share the same room. You live in separate houses.
Correct.
Right? What else?
Right.
That's basic. Let's go over some basics. You're not promoting for people to start being polygynous. You're just promoting, trying to educate people on this so people start attacking people who are practicing what the Creator has legalized for them people to practice.
So indeed.
These are some of the basics that we can cover.
Okay, good stuff. Well, I'm not going to hog the mic. That wouldn't be fair, because the other stereotype is that, well, the man just runs and women just don't have any brains. Mm-hmm. So let me pass that on to my wife, Fatima.
So you understand what I'm talking about, the basics now. We're going over, so people who just hearing this, it's a culture, it's a shock for many people.
Right.
But just one thing. What hasn't been put, when I said shock, I want to take that back, because there's so many shocking things, immoral shocking things, that we've been so desensitized that people are just accepting everything.
Right. Well, to get to your question, we don't live in the same home, but we have traveled together, and we've cooked in the same kitchen and interacted together with each other, and we had a good time. We actually have a good time together. So it's something that's doable if everybody agrees. Now, with that being said, it's difficult for me to have my grown daughters in my kitchen, much less my co-wife in my kitchen, because we share the common idea that we need to have our own space, and we respect that. Mm-hmm. Now, I always joke and say, how big would the roof be? Are we talking 53,000 square feet? Are we talking 1,400 square feet? Now, that would change things, though. If there's wings on a residence and it's that big, well, then that's another conversation. But what we're trying to do, and what we really have done our work, and we want people to know that this is something that's doable.
Mm-hmm.
Polygyny is not something here to hurt.
Yeah.
It's a social solution.
It's interesting. It's interesting. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh.
We didn't let people know how long we've been married or how long we've participated in so.
24 years. 24 years. So 25 and May and 9. So we've been in polygyny for 9 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And these are families. These are institutions now that you're
We're one big family. We don't separate You know, and I know some do, but we don't practice that. There are babies and our bonus babies alike. So.
And you see, like several years back, you had a program that got popular. It was called Sister Wives. Have you heard of that?
Yes, absolutely.
But then now, I think that was like one program. And then after that, then you had Seeking a Sister Wife.
Yes.
You had Man with Three Wives. You had, you know, it just seemed like the TLC, that the network it was on.
Yeah.
People were interested. They wanted to know. They're watching it because if there was such an outcry against it of negativity, they would have canceled the show. But it seems like now they have a multiple shows coming up that
are. They've raised a lot of awareness regarding that issue, because people talk about, you know, legal or illegal and so on and like that, and legalizing it and working to do so, which is fine. That's a great idea. There are organizations doing it. There are lawsuits filed on behalf of it. I don't know anyone locked up for polygyny. I don't know anyone that has been locked up or penalized or anything like that for polygyny. The challenge is that when it gets attacked, the immoral things get promoted, but the moral things get attacked. So it's like things are in reverse now. Moral meaning that you're there to provide for your family, to provide a structure. Mm-hmm. And due to the moral decay in society, that's why we have so many single parent homes. That's why we have the rise in alcoholism and depression and suicide. Many things stem from the trauma that is caused in dysfunctional homes where abuse is going on, even if a person doesn't recognize it as abuse. Yeah. So I guess the question would be more, why would these women, you know, no one really wants to know why men want to participate in polygyny. You know, that's really not usually a question. But why would the women really want to participate in polygyny? Why would that be an option they would participate in?
Yeah, that's her God-given right. Because people always think about the man, but no, but now you're infringing on the woman's right and telling her what she can't and can't do again. She's an adult.
Indeed.
She's made a decision, and this is not something that now is something new. It's something throughout history, and we'll get to that in the next point, showing that this is something that was a way of life for hundreds of years.
Thousands.
It was something that was normal, and still today in many different countries. So it's not something that's immoral. It's moral, and it's sanctioned by the Creator, by God Almighty.
Exactly. It doesn't have the same issues and challenges that we currently have in society today where you don't know who the father is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the TV shows have gotten famous with, I'm not the father. You know what I'm saying? It's really sad that a child doesn't know who that is, and because one of the knee-jerk reactions is, why can't I have more than one husband? Even biologically, really wouldn't make sense. Who's going to be the father? And what women really want to take care of more than one household or even have the physical ability to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's when you relegate marriage to just simply sex
versus
an institution that is there to protect the family, continue life and provide morals and really create and develop leaders.
Let me go back to, and you guys, whoever wants to address this, back to the basics. So we're still on the basics of you guys not coming out to want to call people to this, but you want people also to stop, to get educated and stop bullying people now who end up practicing this way of life. Again, that's sanctioned by the Creator.
Right.
And help people who also through your relationship counseling to help people who are in this type of a family structure to go ahead and have it run more peacefully and to help them deal with, give them the tools to deal with the challenges that, you know,
Absolutely, right.
Because do you see when I use the term bullying that people they bully?
Yeah. We've had a lot of that happen where any incoming wife or subsequent wife, second wife comes in, or you know comes into the family, or the husband marries a second wife or subsequent wife, they're considered the homewrecker or not the real wife or just a person who doesn't have the same rights as the initial wife, and it's like it's a negative thing where it's like, okay, well, she's hurt and she's in pain and, you know, someone did something to harm her, the initial wife. And then there are a couple of things you have questions or I've had. I'm a subsequent wife. I came in second wife. So it was things as though where it was, did you think about the first wife's feelings before you decided to marry her husband and things as far as that?
I'm people like, have said this to you?
Yes, uh-huh. Yes, yes. And and it was to the point of that. And it was a number of things where, you know, like I say, they're considered home wreckers or someone that is destroying a family or anything like that. Like, the husband didn't have a decision to make, and that is a bad thing. Because when a person asked me, well, did you think about the first wife's feelings? I said, I never looked at it as anything negative. So because I didn't look at it as anything negative, I couldn't see any pain or hurt. We have natural jealousies, of course. That's just the way it is. But to have something where it feels like it's something bad or detrimental or demeaning, that wasn't something that came into my mind of getting married to someone in a way that is actually permissible.
Do you see it ironic that many of the people who throw out these terms like, don't judge me, right? And they're indulge in all sorts of, you know, mischievous acts and sins and whatnot. And we're all sinners. We make mistakes. And the best of those who, you know, best of sinners are those who turn back to Allah and repent. But do you see it ironic that those people who use those kind of terms, now they end up judging and bullying when this and it comes to this topic? Have you seen yes. the irony in that?
You know, people a lot of times just are just plain flat out hypocrites. So if a woman chooses to cover herself like my wives are covered, like the beautiful Virgin Mary, one of the most righteous women ever walked the earth. Anytime you see one of these made up pictures or statues, you always see her covered properly, right? No one sees her as oppressed. Right. So my wives imitate that, for example. Now they must be following some man or Islam is forcing them to do something. But what happened to that choice that they had? You know what I'm saying? So absolutely, we see it. And again, we're talking about another form of marriage that existed for a long time, where when I was growing up through high school back in the 90s, well, gay marriage was not a thing. But now they're supporting gay marriage, but initially and kind of secretly being against it. So we promote things that we don't affect us, but many times it's really just done out of fear. People think that it's going to happen to them or they'll catch the polygyny bug and a rub off or something like that. It's weird.
The second part I want to get into is now getting into some history, getting into this being a norm of history, even getting into some of the Bible, showing that through history, this is something that was a norm. You have many of the biblical prophets that are also prophets in Islam who practice this. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Well, we were all raised Christian before becoming Muslim. So we were very familiar with these stories, right. Whether it be Moses, whether it be Abraham with his wife Sarah and Hajar or Hagar. Or, I mean, they say Solomon was supposed to be the wisest man that ever lived. That's what's really promoted through Christianity. And he had 700 wives, 300 concubines, according to the Bible. So it made me wonder, is he so wise because he's able to handle and deal with 700 different wives? Hey, I don't know. There may be something to that. I don't know. Islam came and limited it to four at one time. But every single prophet that I've seen in the Bible, with the exception of Prophet Jesus, had multiple wives. Mm-hmm. And it led me to kind of wonder, like, why? You know, why? And looking around in society, it's really just a part of nature of man, if you will, to want to take care of more because we're attracted to women. First of all, you know, there's a saying that says men are seduced by their eyes where women are seduced by their ears. You know, so one thing is a part of just nature biologically. I mean, we deal with a lot of people who are not Muslims. I mean, whether they're Hebrew Israelites, some Sephardi Jews, African spiritualists, they are attracted to what we do, being open about it, showing how family can function. And we utilize, again, they know we're Muslim, it's obvious to see, but we utilize the rules and the structure that Islam puts in place for it. And many of them see the wisdom in it and they use that for their lives.
Yeah, I like what you said. Islam came to limit it now, because it was something that was without restrictions. A man can marry however many, but now Islam didn't come to reintroduce it, just came to limit it.
Absolutely.
To four families.
To restrict it, because, again, as human beings, we tend to oppress each other.
Yeah.
So the more power you have, then the more you take away from others or the more you begin to oppress.
So now you can have four extended families here, if you want to call it, or four, however you want to.
Four is part of your tribe.
That's your, that's your tribe. You can have four tribes.
Indeed.
And you'll be the bay.
Hey, well, Bay. Indeed, yeah. Indeed.
Yeah, all right, so we covered that. That's very, very important. So you had Abraham, you had Solomon, you had many of the biblical prophets in there. The Muslim prophets, they were ones who submitted to the will of God. Mm-hmm. Islam means submission to the will of God. So they all they practiced this. The last and final messenger sent to man, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and all of them. He also was someone who practiced this. And his Sahaba, right, his companions.
Right.
And the list goes on.
Indeed, it reminds me just of the biblical story. And we talked about Abraham, and we look at his children, you know, Isaac and Jacob. Jacob in particular had 12 sons, from where we know the prophet Joseph or prophet Yusuf, alayhi salam, is from. And one of the things that many people don't know, at least in Christianity, when I was Christian, we didn't know the reason. Well, prophet Jacob had four wives, and prophet Yusuf, and then, of course, his brother, who was named Benjamin in the Bible, had different mothers. So they said that the jealousy from his siblings arise from his father loving him more. Okay. And since he had a different mother, they, you know, kind of utilized that kind of against each other, which again goes to polygyny, but it goes to just normal stuff because there are different things, as sibling rivalry. These things have happened. That's really a part of life. But just seeing the wisdom of these prophets, who are the most righteous of all mankind, whom God chose to bring a message of truth and to live a life of righteousness and to demonstrate it, culminating again with the Prophet Muhammad. May peace and blessings be upon him.
So these are the greatest men to walk the earth. They practiced this. They didn't practice any immorality. Again, they didn't have girlfriends, mistresses. They had wives. And the only people, as we see, is this correct, that how this change happened is man, specifically if you talk about Christianity, the church, they ended up changing this and prohibiting it. And then how, same thing with in the Jewish tradition, this was something that was normal. They end up, the rabbis changed it.
Right. I mean, that's happening now, where you have, it's clear throughout any people who follow scripture, just about the homosexuality example. All right. And I don't like to argue homosexuality one way or the other when it deals from a religious perspective. And the reason being is a person may not believe in your scripture. They're going to their scripture and kind of fizzles out, if you will. But when you just argue it on a pure biological sense, if you say, hey, you know what? If everybody did this, that'd be, if everybody practiced homosexuality, nobody would be left. It's the extinction of human beings. Therefore, I can deduce from basic reasoning without religious reasoning, if you will, that it's bad for us. It leads to our extinction. Versus if everybody got married, okay, we know, that opens the door that our species will continue to exist. Mm-hmm. So the reason I say this is because today that's heavily promoted. And now you have churches and other institutions that are beginning to adopt that in opposition to scripture. Okay. Again, and they can do whatever it is they choose to do. We all have a judgment. We all will be resurrected. We believe this strongly and firmly. But when you push something that's moral, you should kind of see just the example of everybody's life. When you look at Prophet Jesus, I mean, he was preaching the truth and was moral and calling people to the truth, and they tried to kill him. Mm-hmm. You know, so this is just the way of human beings, sadly.
Yeah. You guys want to add anything? Tell me, so we covered that part, but it was interesting. You had depending where you're at, where you're living, you get affected, obviously, by the social pressure, groupthink culture, how people think, how people act in the culture. Like here, for instance, people don't like being lied to. There was a Christian pastor and another Christian. They were talking about this subject, and I was just looking up and doing some research on it, and they were trying to put a spin on it, talking about how actually this wasn't something that was good and whatnot, the way they were putting it. Now, the Christian, this again, the forum here is a Christian forum. Muslims were not really a part of this discussion. And we'll put up some of the comments that the Christians were making. They were like, man, paraphrasing, these guys are spin doctors. They're lying. They're this, they're that. Because they're lying. They can see the text is clear what it says in the Bible. You can't go left or right. It's clear.
Right.
You mentioned some examples, but this Christian pastor and another Christian, they were trying to put a spin on it. Mm-hmm. And the Christians, not the Muslims, were calling them out. You can see some of these comments here. It was very interesting.
You know, it's crazy because I just put a post up about polygyny and about an article that I read that tried to put a spin on it that talked about how negative it was. They talked about gay marriage and how it's legalized and things as far as that, but then they were talking about how it doesn't look like polygyny would be legalized or those type of things because they put a, they had some skewed information that made it seem like that the women are controlled by the men, that they're that the men who have the money and the power take over all the women and that they control them, and the boys are uneducated, the men who can't afford, so to speak, to take care of multiple women, they're the ones that's just shunned and kicked out or anything like that, kind of like a lion in a pride where it's like it's a fight to the death, and or you get kicked out of the pride and now it's just this man that controls everything. And I said, you know, that's really interesting because it's not about, I mean, it's about a moral, like the moral compass. And I said that if polygyny was not ostracized and is an option more than being ostracized, then the moral compass would change. It'd be better for a community, better for everybody else. Not saying that everybody has to practice polygyny, just that if it was a viable, I mean, it is a viable option, but if it wasn't so shunned, you wouldn't have a lot of people hiding who are practicing polygyny. There wouldn't be people that wouldn't have a problem with it, but then you would see that people are trying to take care of their responsibility, because that's what it's about, yeah. Taking care of responsibility. I felt that monogamy was really pushed to allow men of power to not really take care of the responsibilities of their desires.
That's a really good point, because we see now in history when this actually happened, where we talked about the consistency of this practice, but then we see the church, the rabbis changing this, and then you see the Roman Empire at one point where they illegalized this and they ended up having one wife and they made it illegal, but then you can have as many concubines, right. And these are modern day mistresses.
Right. Right.
Can that be synonymous?
Absolutely.
Mistress, concubine, sex.
Yeah. It's interchangeable. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
because it's a big responsibility now. People think this is a joke. It's a big, huge responsibility to do what you're doing.
Exactly.
You know, it takes a man's man to step up and to take care of, you know, the families like you are. But it's easy to go ahead and just, you know, have some side chick on the side.
Yeah, that type of thing breeds the immorality of society. So whether it's prostitution, whether there are children that are just left alone without any father around. I mean, looking at my community, in the black community in particular, you look at single family households being out of control. You look at a government that has been at war with black people for a very long time, especially after the rise of black consciousness in the 60s. You had black exploitation going on. You had drugs introduced, and you had mass incarceration that affects us. And I come from a state that I really call Jim Crow North, because it locks up more black people per capita than any other state. And we're in the Midwest, you know, so communities are decimated by it. One viable solution. And then this is if you can find a good man. See, the challenge is that one, women already outnumber men to begin with. So now in a community that lacks good men to begin with, something that's not abusive, there's not alcoholism, other abuse going on inside the home, and it's actually a marriageable individual, the women are really at a loss. So the onus really becomes on those who are responsible, again, to become more than twice the man, to restore peace, restore order, restore some harmony in the home, where now women can have the honorable title of wife and operate as such without permission from anyone other than the Creator, who gives you rules and regulations with which to operate, operate by.
So the idea here, again, is educating the people. And for those people who will hush quiet and not say anything, scared when somebody is practicing a lifestyle that's displeasing to the Creator, and here versus someone who has a green light from the Creator,
Absolutely. I mean, don't bully. There's such a thing today as slut shaming. Slut shaming, which is kind of oxymoron, because the Prophet let us know that if you have no shame, then do as you wish. Shame is supposed to be there to help us with our shyness, with our modesty. If you have no shame of being a slut, and promoting that and calling yourself a slut and doing those types of things, then morality, there's no moral thermometer or thermostat anywhere. And what good, if we're looking for good and peace and justice, is going to come from such type of thinking?
We take one example of the culture, let's say here, but then you have other Christians, for instance, in Tanzania. You have John Magufuli, I believe that's the president there, mm-hmm. where he's Christian, it's not Muslim, where he's calling men because now they have a huge epidemic, a problem of women there who cannot get married. And it's not like the system here, let's say, where the government takes care of you. If you don't have a man there to take care of you and everything you need, you're going to be just left alone. I mean, it's a very different environment. So he's giving incentives to men. This is the president of the country in Tanzania. Have you heard of this?
Yes.
And he's Christian also. So I think you have, what, like 30 million women, 10 million men, something like that. So what do we say about them?
We say we have a solution.
Right.
The solution is age old. We don't need to take another census and anything else. We have to, one, raise boys to be men.
Okay? Raise boys to be men.
Raise boys to be men, because that's really where it starts. And that takes responsibility. It takes a sense of justice. It takes a sense of morality, because those type of men, one, are attractive to begin with. And that attraction will help you attract the type of woman that you would like to build a family with. Okay. And being able to do that one time, and if you grow and expand and continue growing, because it's about knowing thyself and then growing thyself, you can do it a second time or a third time or a fourth time and make a massive impact by duplicating that process. So we already have many solutions, and this particular solution dealing with marriage, which goes to the core of everything. You could be out running the world, but if you come home and your home is hell, you know, you're not going to have peace. Mm-hmm. So this is a major, major solution, and society's crying for it. So why hide and go into that when this is something that's moral? We want to educate people, equip and empower them.
Broken home, broken society. That's it. That's the formula, right? And that's what we have today. I mean, if you look, what are the numbers of zina, fornication, of immorality? It's the highest, I mean, we've probably seen, right? Mm-hmm. It's skyrocketing, just marital affairs and all sorts of corruption that's out there. And now why would you attack something that's actually a solution to that?
Right. And that, well, that's the thing, too. When we talked, well, a couple of things with the women outnumbering the men. I mean, and it can go into mortality rates as babies and all the other things like that. And I was talking to my daughter, and I said, you know what? The crazy thing is this. It's like, okay, let's say every available or marriageable man married one woman.
Mm-hmm.
Married one woman. There's so many women that are left. They're left without a companion, without the opportunity to have children legitimately, you know, things as far as that. And it's a breakdown of a community, because mm-hmm. now they're fatherless homes. There's not a person there to help boys become men. I mean, I know that there's women that say, you know, I can help my son do this. We as women, we can teach our sons, you know, what we will like in a man, what, you know, certain qualities that we will like in a man, but we can't teach them how to be men.
Mm-hmm.
We can't teach them how to do that. So when it comes to that, and when it comes to people shunning something that is a benefit to society as a whole, it is devastating. And so we are here to try to educate on that.
Yeah.
And of course, we get blowback and everything like that. However, our thing is, we know what we're doing. We're strong in what we're doing. We stand strong in it. And those who are looking to benefit from it and who are looking to receive the help, we help them.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter what, for the most part, it doesn't really matter what people think. If it's something negative, we're going to still stand strong to our morals, and we're going to still stand strong to our for our beliefs.
So the Creator, God Almighty, Allah, is not forcing you to implement. You don't have to, but don't bully people who have chosen this as a solution to them. And that leads me to my next point, is we covered history. We covered some of the basics. And the third point I wanted to cover, it actually being a blessing for women, for many women, it's a blessing. We see, we've seen many, I've talked to many different imams, have shared stories where there are so many women coming to imams because women cannot get married today. So they're coming to the imams to advocate for them. And many of the imams are terrified because if they say anything, they got a position, they got a job, their community is going to, they probably lose that position, that job. So they hush, hush, and they can't speak on the topic. What do you think when someone says, how is this a blessing for women? How can this be a blessing for women?
Well, for us personally, we try to make things easier on each other instead of harder. I think that oftentimes in our community as Muslims, we don't open up the dialogue about polygyny. We run from it. So our job is to not run from it. We're not running from it. We're not telling everybody they should do it, because you do have to be built up a certain kind of a way as a man, like we were stating, in order to create that balance, because you're the imam of your home. And in our case, our separate homes, but we all have the same core values. And we really, as a community, since our community is hurting, we're Muslim. We have to open up the conversation. There should be no reason why people fear polygyny or entering it, or we shouldn't have trouble with brothers having to officiate it and being running and being afraid, because it is the judgment that they're afraid of. It is the, oh, you did, you facilitated something that is not right. But if it's in, if it is right and it is halal in the eyes of Allah, then who are we to say what our opinion is on that? It's something he allows, and we need to shout that as loudly as possible. All of us. I haven't always been that way, because I always make this joke. I'm over 40 now, but 20-year-old me was very possessive and jealous. And I was like, I'm not sharing my husband with anybody. I know he can have another wife, but we're not doing that. But I made the decision without his input. And I'm sure it is something that, even at that young age, you know, of we were nine, he was 19, I was 20 when we got married. I'm sure it ran across his mind. And it's interesting, because my own grandmother said to me, she said, you know, he's young and he might not want to just be with you always. Now, I was like, what are you talking about? Why not me? Why not me always? What do you mean? Because she was wiser, and she knew, even being a Christian woman, she knew that men had the desire for more than one woman to be in their life. She wasn't saying he would be promiscuous. She was just saying, he's not different than any man I've met. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that now. But I love that, though. But we try to, within our family, we try to make it easy. So I think about the times that we've had some tragedies in our family, whether they be health, whether they be death. My co-wife has been there for me. I've been there for her. Mm-hmm. And if I had not have had that, it would have been difficult, more difficult on our husband to try to help care for both of us in those instances. So,
have you seen some of these feminist movements? I mean, you have women out there who, obviously, a man should be kind, merciful. As Allah tells us, the blueprint is there, how a man should treat his wife on a footing of compassion and kindness. And you have also how a woman should be towards her husband. This is all laid out. It's clear in the Quran and the Sunnah. We don't have no guesswork. But then you have sometimes, again, you have the social culture, you know, this pressure that comes in. And then now you have this drive that, because of this pressure, many women get stuck doing things that they would normally do. Let's say they go away from, you know, the blueprint, and next thing you know, she's you know, missed her fertility window. She's old and by herself. You have a lot of non-Muslims, you know, examples. You read a lot of articles, women now who've accomplished so much, and they have the certificates all on the wall, and everything's you would think from a worldly perspective she's accomplished. Now she's alone. She's sad. She didn't establish this family. Now this can potentially be a solution for her, right? Because she maybe can't have that one. But now are the feminist movement coming in and saying, let's help. This will actually help women. This can be that blessing to help fulfill the life of so many women who just cannot find, you know, a husband. But potentially this door can open for her to come in to be in an extended family.
Okay, a couple things. That can be. It can be. However, as a solution, is polygyny is excuse me, polygyny is not just to save women from desperate circumstances. Yeah. Many times you get people, sadly, Muslim women, that try to use that. Well, if this person is in need, they're needy.
Ah, yes.
Therefore, I'll tolerate it if she's single mom with all these children or
a condition, a
widow, and yeah, right, right. So that's not required. It's not required, but it's absolutely a solution that goes into the many different levels of the wisdom in it. So whether it is a widow or a single mom,
that's just one of the levels, but that's not the
exactly. Okay. There's several different levels that, again, beyond our understanding, even with the wisdom. Now, with feminists, traditionally, I mean, their movement is not a moral movement, if you will, and many of them operate from a position of trauma that still has yet to really be dealt with. So even dealing with a man or continuing a family many times with them is not even in agreement from that perspective. So what occurs is the person has two choices. You mentioned a super worldly successful woman at a certain age. She has a choice. Okay, either I'm going to find a man to get married. And when it comes to my community in particular, when I'm talking about the Black community, we're talking about less than 30% of Black women even get married to begin with. Mm-hmm. We're talking about 30%, one in three gets married by the age of 30, period, which is a shame, but it goes into those options. And one, Islam is a solution. And then, of course, polygyny when it comes to a form of marriage. However, that's not the only solution. But either she's going to choose a moral option, which is polygyny, which is what we advocate, okay, which is marriage, a moral option. That's what we're talking about. Or an immoral option. Mm-hmm. So you'll suffice to just have a man in your bed, okay, to take care of your physical needs. Mm-hmm. All right, you don't need anything else from him because you're super successful, but now you're not going to go out and you don't have this other person that you can, you know, publicize or have the honor of being called a wife, but you'll still be getting used and having your precious body being used by someone else because society ostracizes or look at a thing in a certain way. Whereas I was just at a meeting, and one of the guys next to me in this training, he was a gay guy, and he was just happily talking about his husband and everything else. So now it's out the closet and good to be. And then people are just like, okay. And the pastor, there was a pastor as a part of the group, and he was really excited about the guy and everything else, where this is a different world. Again, when you are judging it by morals versus something that's immoral. And the way you kind of look at that on a human perspective is looking at the result that it leads to. Mm-hmm. And we know it.
Do you get that kind of same positive vibe like you just described when you talk about
polygyny?
Yeah.
Me personally, people don't come to me in a negative fashion, maybe because I'm a man and I put very little weight on people's comments about something. I learned that once I become Muslim, because my majority of my family, you know, almost 100%, of course, except those I married and the children that come from us, they're non-Muslims. So when you do that at 16 to 17 years old and you change your diet, you change your lifestyle, they've already ridiculed. My ridicule meter and bovine excrement meter has been hit as a teenager. So if somebody comes at me with something, then we can either have an intelligent dialogue or we can go at it in debate, mm-hmm. you know, intelligently in that fashion. But the women can speak more on that point.
Yeah. I wasn't that strong when it came. I didn't. I was a people pleaser. I'm still kind of that way where, you know, it's for the greater good. It's for the betterment of whatever. Less drama. No drama. I'm happy. I'm at peace. However, it got to the point where I wasn't at peace. I wasn't happy because I wasn't being true to me. I wasn't being true to myself, or I felt I had to hide something that I didn't feel that was actually wrong because of fear of what other people had to say about it or what other people had to think about or what. And it got to the point where I said, you know what? They're not living my life. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not harming anyone in the process. So why am I caring so deeply about what they feel about what I'm doing with my life and, you know, and my family or anything like that. And it was when that light bulb or that switch changed and I was able to confidently say, well, this is my life. This is what I'm doing. I'm at peace. I'm happy. It took a minute, but people around me saw that and they saw that confidence and they saw that, you know what? You know what? She is for real about this. And they thought about it a little bit more because knee-jerk reaction, they're going to say whatever they want to say. But when you put them in their place, and you don't have to be disrespectful with it, you just let them know. When I was able to do that with my family or my relatives and let them know that this is what I do, this is what I practice, and you guys don't know the ins and outs to make a decision on what you're saying or what you're talking about, they had to sit in that. They had to say, you know what? You know, you're right. I don't know. I have not given this a chance. I haven't looked at it from a different perspective. I was just being closed-minded. And when they started to see it from my eyes, when they started to take the blinders off or whatever it was that was shielding them, they started to see, you know what? That makes sense. She's happy. She's not being harmed. Everything is working out fine. Why do I have a problem with it? Mm-hmm. And so when they had to ask themselves, why do I have a problem with what she's doing? And they couldn't answer it in a positive way. They had to stop. It was just that simple. It was like, okay, I'm either going to do this because I'm a bully, or I'm going to stop because it makes no sense to continue mm-hmm. on with that.
Science, you know, we're in the day of science, and everybody, some people take it as a religion. When you have studies, do you know anything that you can share with us? There's been books written on this. One in particular comes to mind, The Myth of Monogamy. You have a study of called the Coolidge Effect. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Yes.
So what can you say when you, because you say when you get into a debate, a dialogue, on one end we see a lot of emotion, right? And then on other end, we've listed history. We can talk about science now. We can look at solutions. When it comes into the realm of science and just the anatomy, the biology of man and woman, and how this, you know.
Indeed, I don't remember the specific number, but I think it said nine women, or nine men. He said nine men. It'll take nine men, maybe a year or two to repopulate the earth. Mm-hmm. Okay. To repopulate the earth. I mean, just biologically speaking, it's nothing.
Nine men?
Like nine men, yes. Billions of people can come from them, right? Yeah. But here's the thing, and we know this in the amount of sperm and stuff that is ejaculate. I mean, it's part of the reproductive system. We are all only here because two people got excited. All right, two people got excited, and part of the creation process, we came through that. But little known to many women, especially Muslim women, I've read a quote where a woman said, you know, my husband came to me and said, you know, you're a 10. I don't see the need for, you know, three other wives. I'm like, well, maybe you don't know the nature of man. Because if you're a 10, which is fine, you could be a 10, he'll still want three more 10s.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Nothing's going to satisfy us except dirt, you know, when we're buried, when we pass. And that's not being greedy or selfish. That's just kind of what it is. So biologically speaking, every Muslim man I spoke with, every man in general, their ears perk up when we talk about polygyny or wives. They hear wives, they're like, well, let's talk a little bit more about that. Or the Muslim guy, he may be scared because sometimes there are several different reasons men don't do it who are qualified to marry. One is the intimidation, the emotional blackmail from a spouse, the threatening.
These were the reasons why he wouldn't do it.
He would not do it, yes. You know, because there's the emotional blackmail from a wife, a threatening to take the children away or leaving you. See, it's one thing as a man to be able to, you have to protect and provide for your family. So you usually protect from the outside. There's a different dynamic when that threat comes from the inside.
Mm.
Okay, so that's kind of emotionally manipulating someone.
That's low, I think.
You know, it is. And sadly, it does happen.
Yeah.
Many times it's empty threats if it's a good man. But sometimes it does happen. A gentleman just reached out to us to let us know his wife conjured up an argument about domestic abuse, got a restraining order against him, took the kids. He hasn't seen him for 2 months and served him because he talked about it. He didn't even marry. No, because he discussed polygyny and was serious about getting married again.
So he fabricated all these.
That's what he said. So if that is true, then he said she did that in order to get leverage with children when it goes to court.
Yeah.
That, oh, I have this domestic. Because he talked about marrying another woman.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how emotional blackmail is. That's one of the major things. I know doctors, we know people who are financially able to. They have the time, successful businesses, and they're married to one woman only out of that particular fear. And, of course, the fear from society when it comes to being ostracized. There are those who just simply can't afford it, but that doesn't mean they still don't desire or want it. We know that men are not like the women. You know, and strength and security are what women are attracted to. So you take a person, let's say a Jeff Bezos, right? The largest divorce settlement in history, hundreds of billions of dollars his ex-wife's going to get. You think a man like this could probably marry and take care of four women, you know, peacefully, fairly and everything else, right? So when we look at the money that goes along with it, but do you think he has more than one woman? You know, I don't know personally. I'm not going to put it out there, but I'm just saying, you know, how many women would you ask, hey, you know, would you marry this man that is, you know, he'll have a home for you, have a vehicle for you, you have your own bank account, you have this, you take care of the kids, so on and so forth. But, you know, he has two other wives. you know, many women, and I've asked them before, I asked some of my relatives, oh, would you marry Dr. Such and Such that you really adore because of his cars and these little, yeah, I would. Well, okay, that's interesting because, you know, that's what people are talking bad about, but you're talking
consent,
about marrying.
She would consent to that. Non-Muslim, she's an adult. Did anybody, like, manipulate her or?
No, no.
spiritual abuse?
No, not at all. Because, again, that you have to make a stereotype that is negative on a person or a thing in order to demean it or dehumanize it.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about polygyny, one, the main fear is that it's going to happen to you. It's like your husband or a man never thought about marrying more than one wife, especially if he knows that's in Islam. Yeah, he'll think about it. But acting on it, that's slim to really none. Very few even do it to begin with. And then most of them only have two wives. I have two wives. I don't have an interest in more, but I'm open to it, but I'm not looking for it. I'm not pursuing it, you know, but because I want things to be in a certain place and the different goals that we have as a family. Now, I didn't always start out that my wife was saying, oh, hey, we've been married 15 years. You think about marrying another wife? Go ahead. That really.
Never bring it up.
No, I mean, you know, so those fears and those things are real and they really hold but build resentment.
Yeah.
Now, we know most marriages fail anyway. Period. Monogamous, polygynous, most of them fail anyway because you're not working. You know, there's that disrespect, that lack of appreciation. There's that resentment that grows and builds. So we find that many marriages, monogamous, more forcefully monogamous, if you will, because the wife is the husband is choosing to be held back by his wife's opinions or feelings or emotions, break apart anyway. Mm-hmm. So emotionally, it becomes sad.
That was the next thing I wanted to get into. But it's interesting you mentioned because we said consenting adults. People don't in this modern culture have a problem when the young lady, when she goes and let's say she does something of having boyfriends, no one's saying she was manipulated into having, let's say, so many different boyfriends and sexual partners. But as soon as, let's say, she now gets herself together and she says, no, I want a husband. I don't want to be, you know, having sugar. I don't want to be some mistress. Yeah. Well, actually, this could be a force. It's a legit, you know, a man who's taking care of her as a wife. But going back to some common, what are some of the common arguments that you've heard? Men abuse it. They can't be just, you know? Those are a couple. What do you hear when you say that? Because you mentioned that most of the time you have monogamous or one man, one wife relationships. You're already against the odds, 50% going
more than
to 50%
fail. Yeah, exactly. More than 50%. Now, that's actually a true statement.
Yeah.
Okay? Because men do abuse. Okay? So the likelihood of a marriage succeeding, period, monogamy, polygyny, or otherwise, it will fail. You have to work on it. So when someone says, oh, that person's not qualified because they're just going to be abusive or something like that, that's possibly true. But however, why would you want to hold on to a man that's being abusive, even in monogamy? Polygyny shouldn't be the problem that caused you to leave that person, because if they're already not qualified with you, you probably should either work on it to try to fix and rectify the situation or find a better situation. Mm-hmm. You know, so these are knee-jerk reactions in Islam, because we know that the two conditions for a man to do so is fairness and time and money. Okay, and time and money, those things are measurable. It's not emotional fairness or anything like that. So those become the things that he can't do it anyway because he's poor. Okay, maybe there's some truth to it. Maybe not. You know, many times we live in luxury. The people that are watching this right now, watching it via the internet, or watching it via TV, there's a lot that goes into that. And there's a lot you're paying for that. So we're living in luxury and speaking from a position of privilege, where most of the world, over 60% of the world, makes less than $2 a day. Mm-hmm. Okay. So poor can be relative, where we're looked at as extremely rich in the West, where you go to some countries and again, $2, $3, $4, $5, $10 a day, that really couldn't get you anything here.
Yeah.
So it really depends. But at the same time, like you mentioned before, I think it was Tanzania you were speaking of, mm-hmm. where if they don't have a man, that's it. You're homeless, you're on the street, you're begging, you relegate to prostitution and a number of different things. So to have wealth there doesn't take much versus it takes manpower, it takes physical stuff. I mean, we're raising children. So between us, we have a dozen children. I have 10 biological children. My wife Fatima and I, we have 7. 4 daughters, 3 sons, and then we have 3 sons and 2 bonus children, a son and a daughter, right? That's 12. So as I'm looking at my boys, I'm trying to raise my sons up to be strong enough men to have multiple wives to take care of this problem. Now, they're handsome and they're smart and they're all of this kind of stuff, but they still need to be able to expand that responsibility to get things done. And now that goes into even one of my daughters expressed interest in polygyny, and she doesn't want to be a first wife. Don't she say, right? She doesn't even want to be a first wife. She's like,
this is our youngest daughter. She's pretty funny. She said she wants to be a first wife, but he must have four wives so she doesn't have to deal with him all the time. She wants him, you know, to share the time so she can still have her independence, so to speak. So at the wise old age of 17, she's kind of figured it out when some of us older people are still kind of grappling with the social solution. And she isn't. She sees what it is for what it is and understands the value in that. And I'm like, well, we must be doing something right at this point to relay that to her. But again, she's just looking at the world she's in, because we support things like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, where they go on 20 dates with 20 different people and make out 20 some different times with each. But then we shun polygyny. So we have the society has normalized this dating multiple people show, or the real world where you sleep around and you have no rights either way. But they will not normalize polygyny, something that has been normal for centuries upon centuries.
It seems like this is another trick on women. Because now the women are the ones who are suffering at the end. If you what you just said, they have these reality shows, how date this person, date person, but she's left at the end with nobody.
Yeah.
Right? There's no security.
Not even a rose.
Yeah.
At the end of it.
And the emotion that comes from it, it's like you're tearing, you're dealing with real people, real emotions. And so to play around with that, it breaks people, it tears them up. And then that's carried on to another relationship or into your household, into your children. And it creates this perpetual cycle of pain, hurt, destruction, things like that. And so that's the part where it's not about polygyny being the only form or anything like that. It's about it being where people understand that it is an option and it's a benefit. It's not something that is detrimental to a society. It's a benefit to society.
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes under, let's go back to Ad, because we talked about the blessings, many blessings there for women, like you just mentioned, that and this would fall in line. Let's say someone has a career, for instance, right? They pursued a diploma. They don't want to be, let's say, a full time with their husband. Talk about this, and this suits them. They don't want to. They don't want to be cooking all the time. They don't want
exactly. Right? This they is want exactly
their space,
right.
Their woman time.
This is
their
exactly what our daughter said. It's like you were a fly on the wall in the house. She said, "I want to have my own career." And I want him to be able to go to his other wives' houses. I'll have my time with him. He can have his time with his wives. And but we have another daughter who's right off the jump. She's like, well, that's not what I want. I kind of want to have my husband to myself. So it's a social solution for the women that do want to participate in it. Mm-hmm. But we're in polygyny, but we're not telling our daughter that wants her just time all the time with her husband to enter polygyny, because right now in her mind she's going, that's not something I want. We celebrate that, but then we also celebrate the fact that our youngest daughter is saying that's something that I want, and I want it to be known straight out. Mm-hmm. I think oftentimes polygyny fails because people are not doing the personal development that it takes, that is ongoing. Because sometimes people go, oh, well, Coach Fatima, Coach Nadir, Coach Nyla, what do I do? And they think it's a quick fix thing. And it is indeed not that.
Yeah, imagine because we're supposed to be emulating the best of men, the best of women. And let's say for the women, looking at the mothers of the believers, would they be champion what today some Muslims, unfortunately, are falling into, going to certain festivals, events that are clearly against the deen? But now, how would the mothers of the believers, you know, who were a part of this, this was their lifestyle, what would they be saying today? And are we taking them more as an example, or are we taking more of the example from the Kardashian show?
Right. And that's the thing, too. When we talk about, okay, so who is your role model? You know, but that, it goes back to morality. It goes back to the morals. You have the age of Instagram and social media and do it for the likes and these things like that. And it's, you have girls taking off their clothes for the likes. You have girls, you know, showing off their bodies for the likes instead of, and I talked to my daughter about, I said, it's crazy because when we were growing up or as girls, we were very smart. you know, it's about the school and books and learning things. So then we start liking on a boy and then we become dumb, you know, and not to be negative about it, but it's like you're doing so much for this person, trying to vie for this person's attention, and you stop doing the things that is, you know, best for you. You stop doing the things that is best with you, best for you, because you're too busy wondering if this person like me, if this person, you know, accepts me or anything like that. So, you know, so now we're trying to be that example, though. We're trying to be the example to say, you know what? You really have to think what it is you want out of your life, you know, and is that good? Is that good around the board? Is it good for you? Is it good for your family? Is it good for, and I have my three things I say, is it good for my deen, you know, which is my way of life, my religion? Is it good for my life, for my mentality, for my sanity? Is it good for my hereafter? If I can answer that positively with a yes, then that's where I go. And that's how I teach, you know, my children as well. That if that's what it is, because it's about morals, it still goes back to morals. And I think I forgot what else I was going to say.
I think it was one sheikh, Tawfiq Chaudhry. I think it was him. Years ago, I was listening to him, and I think he had stated the amount, he calculated the amount of time that the Prophet saw some, because he had mentioned that how sometimes you can just be having your world revolve around this individual. You become very possessive, jealous, and now it's like you're almost like worshiping this human being. Instead of taking this as a mean for me to get to Jannah, Allah is the one I worship, but now it puts a barrier between you and your creator, your excessive jealousy and excessive love. Right. But now when you look at the Prophet when you divide up the homes that he had, I think he came down to, it was like, was it 2 days a month?
Yeah.
If you do the math.
Two, possibly three, if they weren't on expeditions or the growth, right.
Yeah. So when you look at that, and then there's another, I think this was Mufti Menk, who had mentioned, I believe it was him, that we also have this notion to come out and say, well, he did it because this political reason. He did it for this. Yeah, there was some wisdom behind certain marriages, but at the end, you know, it's not always the case like that.
Exactly. We don't need to justify polygyny, because the default in Islam is two. Okay. The exception, the general is polygyny. Okay, and that's how it's been understood. This is, I mean, when you see tafsir all the way back for centuries, I mean, the default is at least two. Two or three or four in Surah An-Nisa, where Allah Ta'ala lets you know to marry two or three or four. Okay, but if you fear you can't be just or be fair, then one. And obviously, there's a general, then there's exception. Which one is more? Which one is more is the general, not the exception, where today things are reversed. And they reverse not just with the understanding of our deen, but it's clear that it's the understanding of the Quran. Because we're dealing with, I mean, genocide across the country. We're dealing with genocide across the world. We have concentration camps going up. We have families being destroyed. We have now the norm being one versus the wisdom of what Allah Ta'ala says when he talks about two or three or four. See, the challenge is that one of the main reasons it's not going to be pushed is that because it requires men to be more. All right, and men are currently in charge of the different laws and in societies and stuff like that. So if it's going to require you to be more and be accountable and responsible, that's shunned upon.
They don't want to be, because just look at the Me Too
movement. It's too fun. You can be fun. Do whatever it is yeah. You want to do with no repercussions.
And now we see, just look at the Me Too movement. How many of these, you know, top upper echelon of celebrities, of people, anchors, news hosts, all these are just coming out, and how many scandals, sex affairs
absolutely.
Right now. So why would they want to step up and be real men?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it costs them more in growing and integrity, and it shifts the balance of power.
Yeah.
Because now if you're more, women, just like in the days of many different kings and palaces and people of power, they're attracted to more people who provide them that security and safety, all right, versus the flamboyant, just throw some money out and you can purchase this person as a commodity,
yeah.
You know.
Next one, a common one is, okay, so we covered the abuse one, men abuse it. You mentioned that, I mean, if by that logic, people shouldn't even get married, because people just abuse marriage in general.
Right.
So, right.
The likelihood of you succeeding in marriage
is
you'll likely fail, because more than 50% fail. But does that mean you throw marriage out the window?
Yeah. So we covered that. Another argument, it's illegal.
Right. Right. Well, here's the thing. There's a couple things. There's a difference between lawful and legal. Okay. So lawful meaning that the creator says what's lawful and what's unlawful. Now, before this country existed, the question is, was it lawful? Absolutely. Now, legal, polygyny has not been legalized either way. Bigamy is illegal. That's when the state has two marriage certificates, which is an entirely different discussion because those are actual bonds. They have two marriage certificates and married to two people at the same time. That is what's illegal. That's considered bigamy. Okay, that's a felony. With polygyny, that's not legalized anywhere. So that's hence TLC doesn't have a problem and the families don't have a problem putting the show on One Man, Three Wives and Sister Wives and Looking for a Sister Wife and every other wife, co-wife show, whatever that's going to come out. Right. Because and again, even in Utah, you know, they have different court cases trying to legalize certain things. My challenge is this. When a country or when a state, let's say the United States, when it comes to them legalizing something, then they're the ones that make the rules for it. OK, we already have the rules. Allah Ta'ala has already revealed this over 14 centuries ago. So that's lawful. So before this country was before this country had been invaded with genocide against the natives who were here, this was already lawful. For thousands of years, this country is a baby country, only a couple hundred years old. You know what I'm saying? So what am I saying is more important as a human being, as a Muslim? Am I saying the one who created the earth and everything on it without these borders and these superficial things? Or am I saying, hey, nope, there's somebody in some institution that came and made what is halal, haram, and now making the haram, homosexuality, halal. Mm-hmm. Do I go ahead now? I change my belief system because now there's gay marriage and now I support it and approve it. And I'm going to go to the march with you. No, those people, they can do whatever they like to do. But that does not change it from being unlawful to lawful. So we should not use the same logic when someone takes something to be that is already lawful and say, well, it's illegal. You know what I'm saying? Because truth be told, I mean, slavery was legal. You know, Jim Crow laws are still in effect.
Yeah.
You know, there's still housing issues and racism is very prevalent. I mean, the United States is the supremacy or the pillar of white supremacy throughout the entire planet. So these things still exist. So if we look at something like that, the question is, who are you? Because when I'm raised, I'm not going to say, hey, I'm a black American. And this is why I did do this and I didn't do that. A lot to know that's not who I pray to.
Do you see some of these scholars or some of the civil rights activists who are out there popular amongst the Muslim community that if we can make a contact, put you in touch where you guys now to advocate your rights as Muslims now with all these other rights being perpetuated for different alphabet movements and all this other stuff that's out there to really now, I think it'd be a noble task to take this on because this is a family structure and families now are being destroyed because of the pressure, the bullying and whatnot.
Right.
Do you see that maybe now they'll come up and start on the platform speaking for, you know, supporting, educating, helping people who are in your positions not to be oppressed?
That would be nice. It sounds like an extreme fantasy because, again, it requires men to be accountable. And the people that are currently in charge, when we look at the Congress and the Senate and stuff like that, these are white men. And, again, I'm just saying the history of
what
this.
What about the Muslims now?
The Muslims are still looking at themselves as a minority.
Uh-huh.
And also in the United States in particular, we're looking at ourselves as though Islam is something foreign. Mm-hmm. So the face that you will see talking about polygyny or other Islamic issues on different media with pundits won't be faces like ours or like Malcolm X's or Muhammad Ali's. Yeah. They won't be black American faces. We've been here for a long time, even before Columbus. So many are still trying to go along to get along and have a mentality like after 9/11. All of a sudden, you become really scared. So we don't really want to rock the boat there. I haven't seen it like that. It'd be great. I mean, we work with like the ACLU on a number of different things and stuff like that. But we want to, for those who are wanting to be proactive, who are dealing with wanting to learn how to control their emotions and actually see this way of life, not as something being rumored about and talked bad about and abuse and everything going on, but can see the beauty in it and how it can actually function when you focus on working with yourself. That's one of the main reasons we started, I mean, Outstanding Personal Relationships.
Because now you see, like, in the schools, you have, let's say, a boy, he's biologically a boy, and he says, no, I don't want to identify with being a male, I'm a female. And now you have groups say, that's his right, right? And now the law is going to be changed, and you can do whatever. Then you go to the doctor, and you want to cut off a perfectly healthy arm. The doctor will think you're crazy, but now you want to cut off a perfectly healthy organ here for production and whatnot that God gave you. Now you have, you know, the doctor's going to help facilitate that, and you can't stop him. But now you have something that's legal from the Creator. I think it's a good time to,
it could be a good time to jump in and join the discussion.
Discussion.
You know, but again,
you're not even part of the discussion, but we are here at the Dean Show.
Absolutely. Hey, we're open. Again, like I said, we're open to it. We're open to working with whatever avenues to promote. However,
because
keeping
in
mind,
here you have more history, you have more science, you have way more arguments here for it, and again, green light from the creator.
Absolutely. Look, again, we're not averse to it, but those we want to focus on helping are those who want and are proactive in whether they're single looking to get involved with polygyny or monogamy, just having a healthy marriage and working on your intellectual and your personal development. That's where our focus has been. But should an ACLU or an organization contact you and want to kind of speak and put something together? Of course, we don't mind being, you know, the forefront for that. This is good. We're advised to do things well. We're advised to help bring people together. So if we have the opportunity to help bring people together, to help their marriage out, to really help it expand in a healthy fashion, emotionally and so on, of course, we're all for it. Again, that's why we're called Outstanding Personal Relationships. It's not just called the polygyny thing or anything like that. Right. You know what I'm saying? It's really about being outstanding.
Another one in the common arguments, the person says, look, the man says now that I can't even handle one.
Right. No. You know what? I love that one. That happens all the time.
You hear that one?
That happens all the time. Well, I can't even handle one. Well, first
and
of all,
and that's like he's overtly saying that you're crazy. Like, you know,
of course,
and then he starts to attack.
Of course, they love that. We've had the posting. We've had people say that, and I'm like, hey, that's cool. Then you're not the man for the job. That's my wife say. Well, then you're not the man for the job.
Yeah.
Again, it's not for everybody. Now, usually, that's just a mask. That's usually a mask where, okay, I can't even handle one. First of all, if you're handling a wife like handling a horse or handling an animal, that's probably the issue.
Yeah.
You don't need to handle a woman.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We need to expand our interpersonal communication skills and work with living with another human.
Yeah.
So that kind of is the first part. If we think we need to handle them, that can be a challenge. And I'm serious. Men really do say that. But again, it's about
point.
Growing
he's
yourself.
Like, he's referring to her as an animal. Like, I can't
like
handle.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, again, the bride that goes on the horse.
Yeah.
I mean, this when we look at the etymology of different words, I mean, the bride is controlled. That bride is the thing that you put on a horse in the front and everything, and and it really controlled there. But again, like they say, you're not the man for the job. And usually it's a mask because that same person may be involved in illicit affairs, or you might have an addiction to, you know, one or several different types of things. So many men are not the right people for the job. You know,
what do you think? Recently you did have a imam who was brave enough to come out and speak on it. I think you posted about it, but then he got attacked because maybe there was a slip of the tongue. We always want to make excuses for our brother. Maybe he made a mistake. He said something. I mean, you know how it is. You get up there, you speak sometimes, and you might utter something that it's a mistake. But he also, people exclude all of the maybe the potential good things he had to say.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
On polygyny, on the topic of polygyny, this khutbah was done in Kenya, and it was a great. He was really good with it.
Imam Sheikh Said Raga, right?
Yes. He has since apologized for his comments, which were very venomous against the black and African American community. So that part had to be thrown out immediately, but you would have to sort that out, and the rest of the khutbah was actually great. The challenge is that was so poisonous in the tongue that it poisoned the message of polygyny he was actually giving. You know, we shared it for the message of polygyny, but
people just
didn't edit that part out.
People just were zooming in on that.
And it was, again, it was very wrong, and it was very hurtful. He said that black people, well, people in the United States, he was making the argument for polygyny being a solution.
Yeah.
The problem was the example he gave, it just wasn't correct. He basically said that over 90% of them, you know, they don't know their fathers, and they're born from one-night stands.
He's also, you consider, he's African-American.
He's not African-American.
No?
He's African.
He's
See,
African.
There's a difference.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Okay, he's African.
He's African, but he's Canadian. He lives in Canada.
So he's African-Canadian.
Not really. Here's the thing, and I know you don't understand my brother. We're brothers, but what I mean by that is, like Barack Obama, for example.
Yeah.
When people look at him, they say, "Oh, he's African American." I say, "No, he's not. He's Kenyan American. He's Kenyan American. His people are from Kenya."
So Say Grago would be Kenyan American.
He's Somali.
Yeah, he's Somali.
Okay,
he's Somali. But the reason I say that is because there's a different experience in the black diaspora.
Gotcha,
so many of my ancestors came from Muslim lands, according to my DNA, and all of our DNA came from Muslim lands, but they were captured, they were enslaved for hundreds of years. So we are American without privilege, but we're African without memory.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So there's a big disconnect. So now many times there's a shift when it comes to ethnicities, where now Black Americans, due to a lot of the white racial superiority complex stuff going on, that other cultures begin to denigrate and disrespect us and dismiss us. So these types of things, and it happened early on, even in Islamic history. You know, so you have books that talked about the Sudan and stuff, and the beauties of Black that I think it was Ibn Jawzi, Rahimullah, had written. So that he wrote the response to it to really lift up the qualities of the Blacks. Mm-hmm. And that's what I have to get the name of the book. Nevertheless, you know, these things were, you know, it's been going on for, you know, quite some time. But so this type of statement to occur from a Muslim talking about an entire group of people was bad, because again, and even if it was for people who were told, oh, these were for non-Muslims, you know, these were just for the Christian Blacks and stuff like that, these people are still, we're related to these people.
Yes.
You know, so to do that to any culture, no matter what culture it is absolutely wrong. We should know better. But like I said, he apologized. And the sad part, the saddest part about it, besides that, would be that people lost the message of the entire khutbah, which is so beautiful on polygyny.
What were some of the points that he mentioned that you're talking about beautiful?
Well, many things that we're talking about. You have to be, you know, more than twice the man. You have to raise up. And it's a beautiful solution that many women are, you know, they're left out. You know, so what he, I think, was probably trying to intend to say was dealing with these single parent households, mm-hmm. where so many are single parent. They're not one night stands. Children know their fathers. They're a small percentage that don't. But that's in any culture.
Yeah.
OK, but this is a solution, you know, for situations like that. So he dealt with that. But he also dealt with the responsibility. And I hadn't heard it this way before. He said, you know what? We as Muslims are responsible. If women are unmarried in our society and they choose to go toward the haram to satisfy their physical needs.
Who's responsible? The Muslim community.
The Muslims,
now.
As a fard kifaya.
Yeah.
Right. As a collective responsibility by leaving women unmarried, because we don't practice polygyny, which is a wisdom given from Allah for this type of situation. And again, that was missed due to his other statements. But I hadn't thought about it in that fashion, because now we are allowing oppression to occur by not practicing something that will be a solution to a problem. So we may be accountable, be answered before some of the actions and deeds that this woman may have participated in, willingly or unwillingly.
Do you think a lot of, you have a lot of our great scholars and imams here in the Americas, do you think they're scared because of their communities to speak up for many of these women because of the outlash that they can get from people in their community?
I can't say if they're scared, but I know that there are levels of fear there.
Fear.
Because, again, if you go against the board, usually the board of the different masajid that are across the country, even though you're talking about Islam, you'll be fired, your livelihood will be fired, you'll be ostracized.
It's more the board, you know, who doesn't come to the prayers, these board members who want to.
They're doctors or they're other professionals, and, you know, they are more secular, I guess we would put, than necessarily, but they control the paycheck. I think it was Ibn Mubarak, Rahimahullah, talked about you need to make your own money. So you can do dawah and not be, you know, have strings attached, if you will, if that makes sense. So, again, you know, and we see people compromise their values all the time, whether they be scholars or not. The challenge is, you know, we have to be answerable to Allah.
What do you think, again, when we hear these terms, social conditioning and the groupthink mentality, how much has that affected us? Then how much does it affect not only just the marriage with one husband, one wife, and that's just sinking, it's being destroyed because of the culture. But then on top of that, us not coming together as a community to hold on to our tradition, our core values from the deen, then now this is how much does that have an influence on the home?
You want to talk about transition? For us, you know, everybody was kind of in love with our story from high school. And, you know, this was, I've been knowing, you know, our husband. I always say our husband. That's another thing. I don't say my husband. But I've been knowing him since he was 14. I was 15 when we met each other. And so when we took our shahada in the mid-90s, and we went to the masjid, everybody just knew it was just me and him, just me and him. And then we had our children, just me and him and our kids. And that was it. And they took almost possession of our story. So then when my co-wife came into the marriage with him, they didn't want to hear that because they had put us on in this place that we didn't ask to be at. And it was destructive because they took our story of growth and loving each other and creating this family, and they used it to hurt her. Mm-hmm. And then they would take their marriage and use it to hurt me. So I said, well, that's enough of this now. So now when people do try to approach us, somebody even went after my co-wife on social media and then tried to smile in my face. And I said, no, no, you don't get to smile in my face because you're talking about my family. So you don't get to play one against the other. Yeah. So when we know better, we're supposed to do better. So she's my co-wife. I've never say that's his baby's mother, because in all actuality, we are wives and we both are the mother of his children. But I don't take my marriage and try to diminish hers with mine, because the community has tried that. They've actually, they don't do it to our husband because he's, I believe, because he's male, and they know males have the potential to become dangerous and intimidating, and they kind of want to see what they can do. So if they know they can use each other, use us to hurt him or to hurt one another, they will try it. And these are people we're saying that we have been maybe friends with or acquaintances with or business partners with. They will try it. So it is for us to set them straight.
Yeah.
You know, we have to, we're not afraid to open up the dialogue of, this is my co-wife. I will hug her before I hug anybody in the room if I'm at the masjid. I'll hug her first. My children hug her first. Then everybody else that's a Muslim sister gets a hug from me.
Yeah.
So I don't, I try to, if I'm elevating my marriage, I elevate theirs. I don't go, oh, well, you know, I'm the first wife and this is the second one. We're both wives. We both are.
Yeah.
So I don't like to use different terms that people will twist. You know, because the problem is within them. It's not within the three of us. We did a lot of work to get here.
What are some of the things so people can recognize? So now we'll get some practical tips going for people who are out there who've chosen to live by this way of life that's ordained by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's the sunnah of the Prophet SallAllahu Alaihi Wasallam, and the majority of prophets that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent, that now some of the things so people can spot it. Let's say, for example, some we've heard women coming to the others and saying, you poor thing, you know.
Are you okay? Yeah. Oh, yeah, the pity party.
So we call it a pity party?
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about that for a second. Is that one of them? We'll put that on the list.
That's one of them. Are you okay? The victimization of the initial wife and the subsequent wife.
What should she now, this is in her mind that, okay, how should she handle this now? Because she can be taken. You like this. You feel like, man, this person cares for me. But is this person actually a wolf in sheep's
clothing? Yeah, they'll switch it sometime within the conversation.
This is shaitan coming through this person, right? Their lack of knowledge. They're coming to me. They're coming to disrupt my peace in my home.
It's a test, and they will test you. They have tested all of us individually. Yeah. But I had an instance where I went to a store with my 22-year-old daughter, and there was a woman there that knew all three of us, knew of the three of us, because she didn't know us. And she looked at me and she was like, how are you doing? Like, are you, you know? And I went, she said, how are you feeling? Because she had got wind that they married. And I knew that without her saying it. I looked at her and I smiled and I said, I'm happy.
Alhamdulillah.
And she was like, are you still married? I said, absolutely. And she just, you know, what could she do with me other than say, oh, that's great. And it just really changed her energy because I knew what she was trying to do she was trying to pick for information.
Mm.
And so when she asked me, I've gotten asked many times, are we divorced because they're married? So it's diminishing my marriage by using their marriage. And I'll always say, no, I'm not divorced. Absolutely not. With a smile versus, no, not yet. Or, no, I'm still hanging in there. You have to teach people how to treat you, especially in this situation. So the three of us are very good at defending our family.
And spotting these
cunning
ways.
Absolutely.
Someone might be trying to come in and disrupt the peace.
And I know you've had
Please share something with us. Yeah.
Well, it took me a minute before I...
At first, were you catching on or you weren't?
Yeah, no, I caught on. It just took me a minute to pretty much put people in their place, only because my mindset was I took on society's mindset of what a second wife or a subsequent wife or incoming wife supposed to be. Stay in your lane, stay in your place. You are the second. You are the, you know, you're not the real wife. You're not the first, you know. This person has this totem pole authority, this hierarchy over you. So until I really And as I said before, I'm the people pleaser. I don't want the drama. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to do this. And it actually started to eat me up inside. And I felt like what I call, even in the programs, I felt what I call myself the second fiddle. I felt that my emotions didn't matter. My feelings didn't matter. And it was these things because of my mindset of what I've taken on from what society put out there, where people would say, well, she's a snake or a homewrecker or these type of things.
People would say that.
Yes. I was called a lot of different nice names, not nice names, I guess I should say. And it bothered me so much, but instead of speaking out on it, I kind of just shunned it or I just went into a shell. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't feel that I had the authority to say anything because I knew what I was getting into. I knew what to expect. You know, you're coming in. So whatever happens to you, you deserve every little bit of what happens to you and be happy with it and deal with it because you are not that important. That's pretty much the societal feelings or norms that I was getting and that a number of incoming or subsequent wives would get. And I've known that because those are the questions that come to me where they feel that they have to meet with the initial wife before they marry their husband. They have to meet with her and get her okay, her approval, in order to say yes, or let's get married, let's have this union, that they have to get that permission and that it got to be okay. I had a person that stated that if the first wife is not happy and she's causing issues, then your marriage will not work. It will fail.
What do you mean permission? What were you guys? That's what they're.
Yeah, they would say that if you did not get that. They didn't say you have to. They just would say if she's not okay with it,
yeah,
your marriage will fail. So it's best that you not even pursue it. So even though he feels that you're a good fit for the family and a good fit for you, for him, and you feel that you're a good fit for each other, it doesn't matter what you two think, because if she's not happy with it, then you're doomed. You're destined for failure. And because those were consistently played in the forefront and there wasn't a lot of subsequent wives speaking out on this is what it looks like, and this is, you know, you do have rights, you do have, you know, this say, because you're not just a subsequent wife. You are a wife. You still have to know your place as a wife, not as a second, not as a person that's beneath or under. You have that, you know, you do have that say so, but it's the way you do it. But it wasn't until I continued to work on myself, get better with that, and have some confidence in order to say, you know what? I know what it is. I know what Islam says. It's not this hierarchy thing. Islam does not put a hierarchy in polygyny. You know, we are all wives. We all have our rights. And when I took that to heart, because I knew it, I just let society dictate how I came into it. And that is what caused some issues with our union at the beginning, because of my mindset and how things transpired.
Yeah.
But when I shifted that mindset, it became better. Mm-hmm. It became better. I became stronger. I became more confident. And polygyny has always been something positive to me, but I started to feel the true polygyny. What true polygyny is,
yeah,
when I shifted my mindset and not let society dictate, you know, what it's supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in your course that you guys do, or what would you call it as, outstanding Muslim relationships?
It's outstanding personal.
Outstanding personal relationship. It's all about personal development and growth and giving people the tools on how to deal with these things. One of the things I noticed is you stress the communication. You know, some people feel that they can't have a good communication, you know, with their other family member in this situation due to the jealousy and, you know, the other things that come about, and some maybe at the beginning, you know, there was some arguments and stress. How'd you guys overcome that? Did you have that, and how did you overcome that?
Yes. That's yes. A yes. We've had communication challenges, absolutely. Yeah. And I'll share mine. I'll let the lady share theirs. But one of the things is to actually find out what your personality type is.
You stress that a lot. Yeah, yes. Personality type.
Now, there are many different personality type tests and so on, but I'm kind of biased to the Myers-Briggs Typology Indicator, MBTI.
What is that?
MBTI, Myers-Briggs Typology Indicator.
They go to that website?
And so you can go to, yep, you can go to humanmetrics.com and take the quiz for free.
Humanmetrics.com?
Correct.
And you can see your personality type?
Yep, after you take the quiz.
What's the advantage of taking that quiz?
Oh, my goodness. They are numerous. One, it helps with your communication. One, again, the very first thing as a man with being a leader and becoming twice a man is you have to grow. So you have to know where you're starting at. So you have to know yourself. And my personality type is less than 2% of the population. So it lets me know, it kind of exposes why I may do some things or feel a certain way about some things.
Oh, so she might not take that personal then, because that's how you were wired.
Once she knows, because that's the next step. First, you need to learn it. Yeah. First, you need to learn it, and then share it with your spouse or spouses, because you want to know theirs, they should know yours, and then we know how each other operates. So my wife, Fatima's an extrovert, all right? I'm an introvert, and Nyla straddles the fence, but mainly an introvert. I mean, her quiz is like really there. But the point is, knowing these different things about ourselves helps us understand how we tick. So now we know the language with which to use, or we know what may upset someone. But it also helps. I mean, major companies like Google and Amazon and major companies do this specific quiz really for their corporate teams and see who gets along best and who will be the high performing teams. So as high performers and high performance coaches, we also want to utilize the same in our lives and our families, which again is that crux that we talk about. So knowing your personality type is very, very important.
What can you say that going through the storm, earthquake, hurricane, what would you call it, or all three in one in the beginning, would it have resembled something like that? Is this just something that if you choose to go this direction, because you don't have a lot of, would you say that if you were living in an environment back in the day where people were practicing this, you'd have more moral support? You wouldn't
no
have
question.
A lot of these outbursts that maybe happen today, these just out of control rages that people fall in, because you have others who are also involved and say, hey, what's the problem, right?
Absolutely. You see things, so you know what the standards are, what the expectations are, and you can model that, or you could ask questions where today it's hard to find. So we had to go on a philosophy that we hold with be the change you want to see in the world. We saw too many people failing at polygyny, failing just at marriage. And I'm like, we kind of developed a process amongst each other. We went from the challenges, we kind of overcame that, the drama and the roller coaster thing, to really be where we are now, which is having great synergy amongst each other. Where for many, that's still just some type of fantasy, but it really takes that growth. So what we did is kind of amalgamated the knowledge and experiences that we've had and different students that we've worked with and that we taught all over the world, and put it together at outstandingpersonalrelationships.com.
Yeah. Did you go from feeling like there's no way I can do this, and with these challenges now, that has this helped you grow to become a stronger Muslim, a better relationship with Allah?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I was at a place where we never were disrespectful within our, you know, our polygynous situation. What's awesome about Coach Nyla is that she always wanted to communicate with me. And then I was like, I'm not ready yet, because it's just weird to me. And it was funny because my grandma said to me, she said, you know, she's not Muslim, but she's wise. And she said, you know, my grandmother, she said, you know what? You don't want to say something to her if it's not kind. She said, and you don't want to burn bridges with her, because you might have to cross back over that bridge, you know, so be careful what you say, because if you're not, you'll put yourself in a position to apologize to her. You want to come out of the gate strong if you're going to come out. She said, if this is your culture and you're going to do this, you're either going to do it or you're not. So I said, who does it serve that I'm not talking to her? Who does it serve? Does it serve me? Does it serve our husband? Does it serve our children? And at that time, it was serving none of us. So I said, that's enough of this. We have children that I think we trick ourselves into thinking, some people do, that the kids are going to be little always. They're going to get older and go, well, you didn't talk, and you did this, and you did that. They'll, what we say is, wash your face with your mistakes. And so we wanted to package something after doing a lot of work, and we invested a lot of travel, a lot of money, a lot of books, a lot of blocking out time and reading and having hard conversations with each other to get to this point so that we can help other yeah. people, you know? And then people started calling each one of us individually saying, well, what did you guys do here and there? And then we came together and said, we should really help others. This is honorable work, and we are very humbled by it. Yeah. And it is an honor to help bring families together versus tearing them apart. So we know what it looks like to have people from the outside and sometimes from the inside tear each other apart and come after us.
Yeah.
And we said, well, that's enough of that. Let's help people at large open up the conversation and find healing. So it's super important.
What would
us.
You say? Another thing, I'm sure you've heard this, where they will come in and try to undermine your family by saying, there's what's wrong with her, there's a deficiency, why he had to go and marry someone else, and then makes her feel like she's less of a person. Have you have has this been one of the attacks that has come also? How have you dealt with it?
Yeah, that's one of the.
Or what would you say if someone came to the person and you were actually, you come out of closet, say, I got you, come here, let me talk to you.
First, you're not going to catch me coming out the closet. Right. I'm not in the closet. I love women, so that's not a problem. Yeah. But anyway, that's actually pretty. It's pretty common.
That's common.
That's common. That's common. One is normally common, obviously, for a woman you've been married to feel okay. Something must be missing. I'm not doing something right. I mean, there's a lady who we just came across maybe a week or so ago. She wrote a book about how to keep your Muslim man monogamous. But the thing I'd share is just, you know, it's a pity you really don't understand the nature of men.
She's writing a book like this.
It's written. Yeah. And we were discussing it. I'm not going
to
give any more airplay other than that. No, not
who's the who's the African American lady was she wrote the book on actually promoting polygyny. I had her on the program before. Do you remember her?
Which Deborah Majeed?
She's a university professor.
Yeah, Deborah Majeed. Yeah. Indeed. But the thing is that they don't understand the nature of men.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You don't get married if you're thinking that polygyny is going to solve your problem in monogamy. All right, or another marriage, even if you're already in polygyny, is going to solve your problem that you have in your current marriage. That's a foolish individual. Marrying someone else is not going to fix your problem over here. That's not how it works, because you can have one fail and one succeed. And, you know, again, it depends on your personal growth. So marrying another woman is not because a woman has a void. I wasn't at a void or losing something or lacking anything in my marriage. OK, so that's not the reason. People like to look for reasons, especially women. But I just let people know, you're not going to understand. Men are not like the women. Like, I would never understand how it is to have a monthly cycle nor give childbirth. And I delivered three of my sons right there. And I'm absolutely grateful. I'm a man. But I would never understand that, just like they really wouldn't understand our makeup and the way we're designed and created. The challenge is making sure we are that type of person for the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what were you going to say? That's amazing. So we talked about communication is key. So for someone who thinks there's just no way I can get over this, let's say, you know, the jealousy is too strong. You guys are a testimony that it can happen. There's so many more that are out there in similar situations.
Right. I'm going to comment a little bit, yeah. And I'm going to give it back to my co-wife, because I was asked before. As a subsequent wife or, you know, a co-wife wanting to reach out to your, you know, to your co-wife, what do you do? Or what if she's not? It's a lot of fear. It's a lot of fear of reaching out, because they're like, what if I'm rejected? What if she feels a certain way? And my advice is that give her some time, give her some space, but don't force the issue. But be open. Be open to it. Reach out. You know, don't be afraid to reach out. I mean, it's easy to say don't be afraid, but that's what I did. I reached out to Coach Fatima. I reached out to my co-wife. And although it wasn't, we weren't besties and skipping in the breeze and, you know, doing cartwheels in the lilacs. It was, you know, it came to be where it is today, where we are friends. We go shopping together. We do things. And I was going to get there too. Yeah. So the example was that I started off, I was giving gifts. I knew when her birthday was. I'm very observant. No one had to really tell me. I'm observant like that. I knew when her birthday was, and then on our holiday on Eid, I would send gifts. Now, he was the liaison at first. You know, I would send it through him. I didn't. So he was the mailman back and forth. And she never rejected the gift, and she never sent anything negative back. I would get a beautiful note, which I still have a number of her thank you notes. And, you know, either they're in a frame or they're in the note box. And it was nothing negative, but you know when there's tension there. That is the thing. And like I said, I'm going to have her speak on it a lot more. But when we were together, like in the same space, there was tension. But it was a lot easier, I think, when you're away from each other, when you're not seeing each other. So my thing is, I still want to give her space. Mm-hmm. So I would try not to be in a certain place where she would be at a certain time. Because that was just, like I said, society-wise, it was that you have to be a certain way. You know, make sure she feels comfortable as possible, regardless of how you feel about the situation. Yeah. So, you know, I did the gifts, and it... more and more it got better, and she you know, spoke to me and reached out to me.
Yeah, that's where you have these, obviously, these human emotions, anger, jealousy, or whatnot. But again, when you look at the best of role models, they never let it transgress those limits, right, that now compromise their deen and their relationship with Allah. Can we say, huh?
Absolutely, because so ultimately important. That's the thing. You, one, as a man, you have to choose well. So if you're choosing someone who's messy and you're not choosing for the family building, then it will likely not only fail, but it will probably cause a long-term effect, negative effect, on your initial wife or your previous wives. Mm-hmm. So that's extremely important. I knew that both of them feared Allah, you know, regardless of when we could overcome whatever challenges with patience and being diligent on personal development.
Yeah. I can go on. But, yeah. we got to conclude at the end, summarizing the main thing, don't bully. If people are, this is not obviously promoting, you got not here to promote it. You're here to educate and help people who are in it. Also, and to, through this education, to have people think like, you know, you're supporting all other parts of movements, or you're quiet. You might not believe in something, but this is part of the deen, is part of Islam. Don't bully people like yourselves who are practicing it and working to please your creator and doing, you know, a responsible thing.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, our book is going to be released early 2020. So depending on when your viewers are watching this, they'll have the opportunity to get the book from us that we're all writing together from each of our perspectives as well.
Yeah. So that's, again, outstanding.
OutstandingPersonalRelationships.com.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys for being with us.
JazakAllah khair.
Nice little session. And thank you guys. For anybody who has any questions for them, you can go ahead, leave it in the comments below. And we'll see you again here next time on the Deen Show every week with a new exciting episode. Subscribe if you haven't already, and we'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.